Welcome. 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 You know, I probably would have been self-realized 15 years earlier than I was had I stayed with my original practice, which was doing self-inquiry. But I got diverted into Zen because I went to Philip Kaplow in New York, Rochester, New York, because his book, Three Pillars of Zen, fascinated me, especially the story of Basui, who had the koan, "Who am I?" I wasted a year there. Then I went to Mount Baldy. And he said, "Who am I?" was too difficult of a koan and started us on other koans. I wasted another year there. Then I went to Los Angeles, the International Buddhist Meditation Center, with Thich Nhat Hanh as the head monk, the abbot, and I was ordained there as a monk. And I wasted 4 or 5 years there. During that period of time, I studied with Maizumi Roshi and Kozan Roshi also, and then Sunsan Sunim. They all had different teachings. They all had different paths. So if you're going to go on any path, stick to one path. You'll wobble a lot less in the end. They're not compatible. Even the various Zen paths are not compatible unless they're from the same tradition. Like Chinese Rinzai is internally consistent, but it's not consistent with Japanese Soto Zen Buddhism. Various Buddhisms aren't compatible with each other. Some of them emphasize work on energies and emotions. Others on voids and emptinesses. So, had I stayed with self-inquiry, I might have obtained those states and the realization that comes with those states earlier. I don't know. Because the way I practiced self-inquiry was the way suggested by Ramana and by Robert, which is just looking inside, looking for the I thought, and where the I thought disappeared. Also to find the sense of I am, but mostly it involved looking into emptiness, looking for the I thought, or where the I thought arose and then disappeared in the morning and in the evening. That's the wrong way to practice from my point of view. And as a matter of fact, some of the longtime followers of Ramana who wrote books about him, like Michael, whatever his name is, agree with me and call abiding in the I the correct form of self-inquiry. I have a link to his book. It's a long, long 1,000-page book on my blog, I think, and also in the website. But self-realization can be very confusing depending on the teachers you go to. I was reading Ramana again today on the I, and never did he state what his experience was. They only talked about experience in terms of other Hindu terms. There's never going to raw experience. It was always how you define one term as another term, and how the other term doesn't fit other terms, and it goes on and on. While with Nisargadatta, there's more touching of actual experience. But what I want to teach is extremely simple. I want to teach you who you are. When the mind is quiet and the thoughts are still, and all that there is a receptive emptiness that can watch the comings and goings of the mind and body, to find out who you are. And really, who you are is always there in your consciousness somewhere. It's just that you're not aware of it because of the mind. So, how to get the mind out of the way? That's what I keep asking. How do I help you? Part of it is to do the technique itself of abiding in the I am and just staying in the I am. Because the thoughts, after a while, you see, are on a superficial level compared with where you are in that meditation. You are much deeper than the mind. But the mind is always operating, generating thoughts. And what you have to do is learn how to ignore the mind, even ignore the feelings. Because they come and go, and they're ultimately distractions. How do I help you see who you are? Do I give you koans? Do I have you practice self-inquiry? But one of the things I have found somewhat useful is to try to liberate you of all the preconceptions you have about spirituality and who you are. And anybody in spirituality entering it, having read books, is filled with ideas and concepts about what the self is, what enlightenment is. And what the teacher has to do is disabuse you of those concepts so that your mind is clueless, stunned, unknowing. And from that unknowingness, to be receptive to a different level of yourself. You see, when we seek knowledge, who is it that's seeking knowledge? And what kind of knowledge is being sought? For many people, like scientists and mathematicians, PhDs in general doing research, they have a goal created by the mind, whether it's the health of the body or finding the God boson or finding the curvature of the universe or the general theory of relativity or whatever it is. It's all in here. It's imagination, it's creativity, it's ideas. And they hunt for other ideas, and they look at what science presents as data, and from that they decide whether the data fits the ideas or not, and if it doesn't, you go to a different set of ideas. There's a whole philosophical structure of how science is built. But even that doesn't allow you to see the world the way it really is. It doesn't allow you to see you, who you really are. One of the things I found useful is to take a look at those comedians that a lot of people consider abusive, like Lewis Black and the Australian guy. I forget what his name is, who drinks beer throughout his entire show, and how they wreak havoc on people's ideas of everything: religion, sex, humanity, compassion, laws, politics. If you can begin to laugh at them and what they're bringing forth, you can laugh at yourself, your own foibles, and how you're just as deluded as everybody else. You get to a place where you're more open and clueless, and you just let the world in and go by. You don't hold on to your way. I mean, you don't hold on to your ideas of what things are. You may still want to hold on to your way, getting your way, but that's a different thing altogether. Another thing I found useful is to go to a teacher and have them disabuse you of any idea you have about what spirituality is. It's not what you think it is. Have you any idea what awakening means for you? Is there an idea in your head? If there is, it's preventing you from having a real awakening. Do you imagine yourself to be Matthew or Balazs or Mark, a human being in a body with a mind expressing itself, having emotions, having needs? That's only on the most superficial level. The hardest thing, though, with the beginning of real spirituality, was when you recognize you're not the body. Nisargadatta and I can tell you you're not the body all day long, but until you see it for yourself, you're not going to believe it. You're going to ponder it and say, how can I not be real? How can this body not be real? I can pinch myself and I feel pain. My experience is I'm real. That pinch is real. It hurts. It doesn't. I just said that. I'm gentle on myself. But if you do a lot of meditation with an empty mind, you begin to see the emptiness everywhere inside. It's just empty space inside, filled with light, the light of consciousness. And thoughts are seen against this background screen of lit emptiness, and they're seen as being insubstantial and having nothing to do with you. In fact, the mind has nothing to do with you. Yet you seek to find yourself using the mind. What method should I use? What does Edgy mean? What does Ramana mean? What does Nisargadatta mean? One of the best ways to get an empty mind is to go out at night somewhere not too close to a lot of noisy people in the city, but like the desert or the ocean or the seashore. At night, when there's now very few people around, and you hear the waves come in and go out, and you look up, and the sky is totally black with, it seems, 100,000 stars in the sky, all crystal clear, and the air is light, and you'd see spaciousness everywhere without. It's so easy then to look within and find that space within. But it takes usually a minimum of a year or two through meditation of looking inside to find that spaciousness that contains all phenomena, whether internal or external. And I think that this has been underemphasized by the Advaitists. They don't know emptiness that well. They don't know the void. They don't know the clear light of consciousness. So when somebody speaks to them of these kinds of experiences, they don't know what it is. Who you are, really, is always available. Nisargadatta calls it who you are is knowledge. You're aware of your body. You're aware of your mind. You're aware of the world, and that the body is contained in this world. And this knowledge happens to the knower or the witness. But at times, we are also aware that we're not aware. We're not conscious of any objects. We're not even self-aware. So, let me go over it again. Self-realization is not that difficult. I mean, it's really simple. Yourself is always there. You're always yourself. What prevents you from self-realization is the belief that you're not self-realized. And by that I mean, you believe you're Matthew, you believe you're Mark, you believe you're whomever. These are concepts you hold in your head, and all the time you miss that aliveness of sentience within, which is you. Can you hear me, Matthew? Okay, keep moving. So, how do I help you become self-realized? There are many modalities, and I mentioned one. I said listening to comedians like Lewis Black, where he knocks everything. He takes a critical look at everything and laughs at everything and breaks every convention of how to relate to another person constantly, leaving you stunned and clueless, just like a careful reading of Nisargadatta does. He leaves you stunned and clueless, which allows you to be receptive to who you really are and what you really are. There are many ways. You see, all that you have to do is get out of your mind, become clueless, have the mind stop. But mostly when we do this, it's by the use of the mind or the ego to direct ourselves to stop. But the best stopping comes when it's spontaneous, like you read Nisargadatta, or your teacher does something to really screw you up, and you don't know what to do, you don't know how to react, you're out of your comfort zone, you're set afloat with no paddle. It's so hard to find out within you what is truly you and what is learned, what is concept. So besides listening to Lewis Black and other comedians that do the same sort of thing, which is to take our society apart, our concepts of self apart, attack religion, showing how stupid some religions are, we can also practice ways to get the mind in subsidence. One way is to listen to chanting. Because Eastern chanting, the bhajans and the kirtans, were designed around a sound system to get you in touch with the divine. And by the divine, I mean that deepest layer within yourself, Turiya. There are different kinds of music. There's Western classical with all of its forms, Western pop, Eastern pop, Hindu pop, Bollywood pop. And then there's chanting, Chaitanya style, men and women. But each of these ways, the spiritual chanting of India, to me, reaches the deepest levels the quickest. In 5 minutes, you could be lost in bliss. The mind totally stopped, and the mind or the attention sunk to a level where you feel the bliss in consciousness rather than something else like your thoughts. Who you are is much deeper than thinking or emotions, even though thinking and emotions is part of you. It's part of you as a presence, as an instantiation of the divine. But as the divine, you have nothing to do with any of this. So, how do I light your heart's fire? One way is self-inquiry, where you light your own heart's fire. And hopefully along the way, there's an intercession by the divine to have grace descend upon you so that you have a moment of self-recognition, of self-realization. Once you have just 1 minute of it, you know who you are from then on. Another way is to have Shaktipat, where you're initiated in the energy tradition to waken the Kundalini, waken the Shakti, so the Shakti takes over and directs you, the inner guru. Another way is to be in love, totally, frantically in love with someone else, because in them you recognize the divine, and by recognizing the divine in them, you recognize the divine in yourself. Another way is to get koans, which blast away your concepts that you already have about who you are and what you are. But let's try an experiment. Let's do a guided meditation. Close your eyes. Look into your heart. Let your attention drop lower than your heart, into your stomach, into the hara. Now, at the same time, do you feel your body? Do you feel your whole body at once or parts of your body? Do you feel your back and muscles tense in the back? Do you feel your back touching a chair? Do you feel your butt touching the chair? Do you feel your feet on the ground? Do you feel the parts in between? What do you see when you look within? Do you see darkness? Nothingness? Or do you see space? And if you see space, is it dark or is it light? Now, feeling within, do you feel the body? What is it that feels the body? If you look within and you find emptiness and void, and the body's somewhere hanging out in there, what are you when you're doing this? Are you the body that's being looked at? Or are you the witness that is looking at the body and feeling the body? Nisargadatta says, you are awareness. Sometimes he calls this knowledge. You are the knowledge that you're a human body and a human mind. You are the knowledge that you exist You are knowledge. That's not all that you are. A knowingness. Things being known. Your knowledge that you're alive. Your knowledge that you exist. You are knowledge that you're a sentient being with various attributes. But we all get lost in the attributes, the add-ons. But he says the primary knowledge is that you exist. I am. But before the I am is the principle that knows knowledge, the principle that is aware of awareness. In other words, you've got two sides. Knowledge of being a person, or being a sense of presence, or being conscious, or being consciousness, or being Turiya. And then the presence, or the principle, I should say, that knows these things. The potentiality of all knowledge is you. But this you is not a thing. It's a principle that floats in the universe and gets embodied in the flesh and in the blood of you with your mind. Your mind makes up all kinds of stories that we've been taught since we were very young. But the principle of knowingness, that's directing the search for who you are, that's directing the mind to find out who you are, is consciousness itself, is awareness itself, awareness becoming aware of awareness, and in that loving awareness. Awareness loves itself. And you are that awareness. And you are also that which is aware of awareness, but which is not a thing, but a functioning of consciousness. In other words, you're nothing, no thing. You are no thing, not a thing, not something that can be observed, not something that can be known. But you are knowledge of yourself. The knowing of yourself. And you are also that which cannot be known, which is the principle of knowing, the principle of the knowledge that perceives the knowledge. One moment you're conscious, you're aware of yourself. Maybe you're in deep meditation and feeling samadhi. Maybe you're feeling bliss. Maybe you're feeling love. Then an hour later, suddenly you're not aware of anything. You're not even aware that you're not aware. Or sometimes you're not aware of anything and you're just awareness. You just realize it. You had been aware for 20 minutes, but not of anything. This is all knowledge. But you are that which is aware of awareness. But you are also that which is aware of the absence of awareness, the on-off switch. Consciousness switches on, consciousness switches off. And you are that which knows that. But that all happens to the body-mind, that complex structure, the sentient meatball, that's the brain, that's the body, with all of its nerves and receptors. The world appears. You realize you exist and you're awake. That's the knowledge. And then 2 hours from now, you're asleep. And there's no awareness. There's not even an awareness that you're not aware. There's no awareness whatsoever. But the next morning you wake up again. And you remember. You remember the past. You have memories. You also have a feeling, direct feeling, that a certain number of hours have passed. When you wake up in the morning at 8 or 9 o'clock, you know what time it is when you wake up. You know how many hours have passed intuitively. Sometimes you don't, but often you do. There's something functioning in the background. You might say at the core of your being. That's in consonance with everything in the world, the power that knows the way. And you're always attuned with that, but sometimes you're aware of it, and sometimes you're not aware of it. But when you are aware, you are always yourself. Now, someone who is self-realized never wobbles because they know who they are. It's an utter conviction, a conviction so tight, so profound, that nobody can convince you otherwise. You know who you are. You are that life force inside. You are that sentience. You are that knowledge, but you are also the principle that makes knowledge possible. The principle, the functioning that knows phenomenality within the world, but is not of this world, is totally beyond this world, because it's not an object in the world. It's not even an object in the conceptual world, in the mental world. It just doesn't exist in our dimension. It's a functioning of consciousness that's outside of us as limited human beings, and which we get to know in self-realization. So, what is it like? Sitting there quietly, look within. See the emptiness within. See it lighted. See that emptiness extend outwards everywhere. And within that emptiness, find yourself as an energy body that permeates your physical body and extends beyond the physical body. Looking into that energy body, find sentience itself. Find that something that speaks to you and says, I exist. I am. This energy body permeates you, permeates your body. It extends around the body. It reaches out into the world. But it's not physical. It's not physical like the body is. Not physical like the world is. It's a presence, a spiritual presence, which is you. You identify with it, the subtle body. And once you can identify with the subtle body and its energies and the light, you no longer think that you are the human body. You have gone up a step beyond the body. And then you recognize that even this consciousness comes and goes. Sometimes you're a body, sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're awake, sometimes you're asleep. Sometimes you dream. Consciousness changes states. It's not steady. But you know these changing states. You know waking. You know deep sleep. You know dream. Right now, that must make you aware. Be aware of that. You are that to which consciousness comes and changes from waking to sleep, to dream. So who is that happening to? That's happening to the focus of your consciousness, wherever you aim your consciousness. the deeper you go into yourself by following the I Am, the more it changes what you are and you identify with. At the deepest level, the deepest phenomenal level of existence, of that which is knowledge, is Turiya, the bliss love state. This is one way also to become self-realized. You hang around people that know the emptiness, that know the love bliss body, that know the knower, that know knowledge. And it rubs off by resonance and by the words people say.